Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. More than half of Northumberland County is Christian, yet most churches in the community sit with mainly empty pews. Nearly the same numbers say they do not have any faith. Maybe that could explain it. But that would be an oversimplification, says Reverend Neil Ellis, minister at St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church in Coburg. At this time of year, many people return to church to celebrate Christmas. The recently released StatsCan census data also indicate a more diverse community in Northumberland, as other faiths such as Hindu, Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, Sikh are on the rise. Ellis will share his insights and more. I'm so pleased to have with me today Reverend Neil Ellis, minister at St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church in Coburg. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Well, thanks for having me on, Rob. Really appreciate it.
Looking at 2022 census figures released by Stats Canada recently, of the roughly 87,000 people who live in Northumberland County, just over half identify as Christian. So here's the corker. 43% say they do not have any religious affiliation. Do those numbers surprise you?
No, they don't. Actually, they don't come as a surprise. When we look at some of those numbers that are on StatsCan, what we see in that census data is a trend that's been going on actually for quite a while. One of my predecessors actually at St. Andrews, the Reverend Dr. Stuart MacDonald, one of his areas of research is on the decline of the church and church numbers. A couple of years ago, he and his research partner, Brian Clark, published a book, Leaving Christianity, Changing Allegiances in Canada Since 1945. And he covers and looks at a lot of that sort of census data, not necessarily for Northumberland County, but for Canada as a whole, and tries to speculate as to, you know, what some of those causes might be and what that means for the church. So seeing the information doesn't come as a surprise. What comes as a surprise, Rob, is that about 2,400 people identify as being Presbyterian. And that's probably more people than are on the roll of the, I think it's 7 Presbyterian churches that are in Northumberland County. So I sort of say, well, where is everybody?
So let's talk a bit about that then, because that references another thing that I'm really interested in exploring. And that is, you know, when people identify as being Christian, to what extent are they active? And how do you define being active? You just mentioned, you know, all these people that identify as being Presbyterian of your faith, and yet that's not the numbers that are filling the pews. So what's going on there? Can you help us understand?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I think that, part of the answer is that people still refer to themselves as Christian. They'll still refer to themselves as having an affiliation with either the Presbyterian Church or the United Church, or perhaps as being a Roman Catholic. But they don't regularly attend, but maybe that was the tradition of their parent. Perhaps they come during certain services during the year. And so there just sort of seems to be that traditional sort of clinging to, you know, to roots in a way that people have. And, you know, you talk about, well, what does it mean to be an active Christian? And I can remember being in I'll call it a board meeting, you know, a leadership group. And this was back when I was in seminary, and they were talking about a particular member. And, one of the elders in the meeting said, well, I've never seen that individual at church on a Sunday. And someone else replied, well, that's because they work on Sunday mornings, but they're at Bible study every Monday night, you know? And so what does church attendance mean, and what does it mean to be active and as a Christian, and what does it mean to live out your faith, whatever that might be and however that might look. You know, those are they're in as much as they're collective questions, they're also very individual questions and the responses that we find.
Well, let's explore that a little bit more. I noticed in the data that Catholics and United Church make up a bulk of those practicing Christianity in Northumberland. Mm-hmm. And that would seem to make historical sense. I mean, if you looked at the settlement patterns, I mean, mostly it was Methodists and Catholics who made up the migration back in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. But what are your thoughts as to why those tend to be dominant versions of the faith in this area?
I think when you think you've hit it there with just the settlement patterns, you know, when you look at from a colonial aspect of those settlers who came over and settled in these lands from Europe, the traditional faiths that they would have had would have been, you know, the French would have been Roman Catholic. And then those who came over from England would be either Anglican or that mix of Protestantism. And the United Church has that larger number because of church union, which is, of course, when the Methodist Church and the Presbyterian Church, for the most part, amalgamated and formed that new denomination back in the 1920s. And so that represents why that number would be that higher number. And that's why we'll see those as the three higher. And a lot of the other Christian traditions, some of them are much newer traditions that have come in later in the post-Reformation period.
There's a lot of different versions of Christianity. We were just talking about all the different ones in Northumberland County. Mm-hmm. When I try to explain this to students in some of my classes, I use the metaphor of ice cream, that there's a basic recipe and a method for making ice cream, but then there are lots of different flavors, but it's still ice cream.
There's more than 31.
For those who may not fully appreciate the various churches, can you give us a very short or basic primer as to why there are so many different flavors, if you will?
Yeah, that a lot of that kind of comes down to, you know, doctrine and theology, which can be heavier topics. You know, at the core, all of the churches would hold to the same principal tenets and beliefs about God. But then when we start piecing out and parsing out maybe particular pieces of scripture, particular parts of dogma, of how we would operate and interpret things, we start having differences there that start cropping up. There'll be some some take a very literal reading to scripture. And so if you're going to take a very literal reading of scripture, then you're going to come out with a certain bias and shape of the way your faith looked. You come out with a certain flavor. And if you take maybe perhaps a more liberal reading, you know, and you're reading scripture as metaphor, recognizing, and I come on a more literal side, or not literal, sorry, a more metaphorical and interpretive side of scripture, recognizing that the Bible contains multiple type genres of writing. And so to read it from cover to cover on a literal basis doesn't make sense when part of scripture is poetry. And so should I be reading poetry literally, or should I be trying to look for what the metaphor and the message is behind that? And part of it is history. In fact, there's in the Old Testament, there's two different books that tell us history of the same time period from two different points of view. And so you find scripture contradicts itself because two different authors with two different biases are telling the same story. But that story is ultimately about God and about a people and our relationship with God. And that's what we need to be pulling out of it. And so it comes down to that. It's not an easy conversation, but within the Christian community, within Northumberland, so I can speak specifically within Coburg, that there's a real sense of congeniality between all of the different ministers and pastors at all the different churches. We've come together many times in the past to work together for the community, to raise funds for different outreach projects in the past. So despite the differences, we're able to get past some of those and say, well, we can still work together. We still have those common things that bind us together, and we can work on that.
When I go back to the stats for just a moment, it comes out that there are other religious groups, and there seems to be a wide range. I mean, there's a large Hindu population in the county. This is followed closely by people of Jewish and Muslim faith. There are Buddhists, there are Sikhs, there's even quite a few indigenous spiritual traditions.
Yeah.
What does that reflect in your mind? What are we seeing going on there?
Well, I mean, we know that Canada is a multicultural society. Northumberland is seeing a microcosm of that. I mean, I grew up in Toronto, which is one of the most multicultural cities in the world. And so we acknowledge and recognize that we live in a pluralistic society. That is, we have a multitude of different faith traditions. And each of those has its own understanding of God or of the divine. Perhaps I could say just more generally of the divine and how to explain that, which in a lot of ways is just trying to understand and explain, well, the big questions of life. Why do we exist? Why is there life? What created and started it all? And as a part of the faith community, as part of the Christian community, when I ask that question of, well, what is the divine and what is that truth? The answer that I find is within the Christian tradition of understanding who we are and how we are and how we should operate in the world. But many of the faiths, though we and I'm no expert on the multitude of different faiths, we ask the same questions, we come to different answers. But there's still a common denominator within all of those the faith traditions that are really interested in the betterment of people and the treatment of people. And you find a lot of commonalities amongst the different faith traditions. I think it's wonderful that we have that diversity of faith within it, within the community as well.
One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, of course, is it's that time of year, Christmas, which is a very central and important date within the Christian church. Mm-hmm. Now, Christmas is celebrated worldwide. In fact, I was talking with some of my international students and asking them about the various traditions that they celebrate at this time of year. And what I found really surprising, and I'd love to know what you think, is that all of them celebrate some form of Christmas. In other words, there's gift giving, there's special food. One student even told me that they have an aunt that gives them chocolates that they call Christmas chocolates. It's supposed to be a real treat for them. So as a religious leader, how do you react to that?
You'll hear some people say, you know, Christ is the reason for the season, or keep Christ in Christmas. I'm not a fan of those slogans, right? I think as a Christian and as a faith leader, I think Christ is firmly there. And in fact, I think that when we're giving gifts and when we're celebrating with family and loved ones, that, you know, as a Christian, that Christ is there with us. So, you know, if we're thinking of, oh, other faith traditions are co-opting, or people who don't even go to, you know, Christmas has become a secular holiday. Yep, it has. That's not a problem. You know, I think an outpouring of goodness, an outpouring of gift giving and generosity, I think society needs more of it. So why would I get upset that one of my Christian holidays is now more of a secular holiday? I celebrate that, that generosity comes out. And many of the other faith traditions, and again, I'm no expert, they have holy seasons around this time of year as well that they celebrate and are caused to celebrate. And they should be recognized and, you know, celebrated as well, you know.
As the world becomes more cosmopolitan, and by that I mean we share our culture so freely, especially in Canada, mm-hmm. I mean, food, music, culture, mm-hmm. can Christianity's message of Christmas being the commemoration of the birth of Christ remain the dominant one, even if it is right now? So where does Christianity fit anymore?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, if you go back to the beginning, say that first birth, right? Well, there wasn't even any Christianity. You know, Christianity doesn't take root as a sort of formalized or recognized religion until, you know, the first, you know, 60 to 100 years after Christ's birth. And in that at that place in the world and that time in history, it was cosmopolitan. You know, if you think about the Roman Empire and, you know, all of the different cultures that fell under that. So really, are we any different? When Christianity first arrived on the scene, it was one among many religions. It was one among many ways of explaining the truth. And today that's the same. It's one of many ways of explaining the truth. I don't think there's any reason why we should be fearful in Canada that Christianity and the message of Christ's birth suddenly isn't the dominant story at any point in time. There's a diversity of stories. There's a diversity of things to share. And I mean, I say that as a Christian leader who celebrates this time of year for that particular reason. I mean, it's, you know, to be technical, it's not Christmas right now, it's Advent. Christmas doesn't start for two more weeks, and then it goes for 12 days. But that's not the story that society shares. And, you know, we're in the Christmas season now. We're hearing that music on the radio. We're seeing the decorations, the lights down at Victoria Park. And, you know, we're feeling that magic in the air, if I can put it that way. So, no, I don't think there's cause for concern. I think that it's, again, just having an open mind and finding reasons to celebrate within the diversity of stories.
You just alluded to my next question, which was to describe what is celebrated at Christmas and the Christmas season within the religious calendar. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about, you referenced Advent, and then you talked about the Christmas season. Can you just talk about that aspect of it in a more strict sense of what that is about?
Sure, yeah. Within the Christian year or the Christian calendar, the Christian year actually starts with the beginning of Advent, which was the final Sunday in November, I think the 27th. So that was the first Sunday in the Christian calendar year. I mean, we don't date differently, but just in terms of how we tell our story and the seasons. And we begin with the season of Advent, which is four Sundays. And Advent is meant to be a time of preparation for the nativity story and the birth of Christ. And when you look at some of the readings that the scripture readings that we look at and read during these Sundays, a lot of them are preparatory. They ask us to prepare ourselves, to prepare the way, and leading up to Christmas. So it's supposed to be a time of reflection. And then of course, Christmas then begins with the birth of Christ and lasts for the 12 days is the season of Christmas, which is followed by Epiphany. And so, you know, from a Christian point of view, it's not Christian for another couple of weeks. And then that tree should stay up for those 12 days and then come down. But, you know.
But why is it 12 days? What happens in those 12 days?
I'm sure that certain traditions, which are maybe more liturgical, which is a church word, that is, you know, in terms of they follow a pattern and a tradition, that there's certain services and orders that happen. From my point of view and my tradition, the Presbyterian tradition, there's nothing different that we sort of do. The 12 days, I believe, is to mark the, and again, I should be more of an expert on this than I am, but we have that story in the tradition. We tell it all in one night of, you know, the pregnancy, the birth, the manger, the cattles, the angels show up, the shepherds show up, and then the wise ones show up, right? Well, the wise ones don't show up until 12 days later. They can maybe even later than that. You know, they're not there on the scene that night. I mean, I don't know any new mother or new parents who want that many people crowding around them. So we tell the story in one way because it captures our imagination. We're massaging what scripture actually tells us is happening.
You referenced earlier that December is a time of the year that is full of various traditions and various religious holy days. There's Hanukkah, which is Jewish. There's Kwanzaa, which is African spiritual. The winter solstice, which is Wiccan. Las Podas, which is Latin American. Diwali, which is Hindu and Sikh. Then there's the Chinese New Year gets jammed in there. And I mean, there's just a lot of winter ceremonies. Even the indigenous nations, some of them do something called the sun dance, which is a tradition at this time of year. With all of that going on, what makes this time of year so special that so many traditions just seem to pick this month or this time of year as a time to celebrate or commemorate something?
I think that that comes out of a time and a place in history when we were perhaps more in tune with nature and the natural world, with the solstices and that time of year, changing of seasons and different things like that. And I think that that sort of is what ties in with this time of year and why all these different faith traditions have sort of come in at this time of year, is that they're following in some ways, you know, those lunar patterns and different things like that. And Christianity is interesting because we celebrate Christmas, you know, it's December 24th is Christmas Eve, 25th is Christmas Day. And that's set, that doesn't move. But Easter moves, right? Because Easter is based on, you know, a lunar calendar, right? And so that's an interesting facet of the Christian faith, right? And so these other traditions are just, I think that's historically, that's why that we find this happening.
You mentioned something earlier, and I wanted to come back to it because it's such a fascinating idea. And that is this idea of a community coming together and responding at this time of year. When we look around Northumberland, we see a lot of philanthropy at this time of year. There's the food bank, there's the kettle drive, there's the Giving Tree. I mean, there is just a grocery list of opportunities for people to be philanthropic, to donate of their time and their money. So it seems like helping others is a central message of Christianity as well. I know you don't care for the term, but have we really lost Christ in Christmas?
Oh, no, not at all. You know, I think that Coburg, I mean, I'll speak to Coburg specifically. In my time that I've been here for 9 years now. I think this is a very generous community when you consider the various different ways that this community has come together, whether it's the faith community or the community at large. You know, you look at something like Ed's House, or you look at the vaccine drive, different things like that. You look at the different service clubs and the work that they do within the community and how that helps the community, and so many other organizations on the grassroots level that come together. You know, we recently had the snow came early in November, and a group of community members said, hey, we have people living on the streets who need to be housed at St. Andrews. We opened our doors for, you know, just under 2 weeks and allowed people in to shelter until the transition house led a facility at St. Peter's could open. And that was powered by over 60 people in the community who made that happen and work. The church just provided space. The community made it happen. So the message of the church, you know, it might be that, well, Jesus is born at Christmas time, and we have our story at Easter of the death on the cross and the resurrection. But when you read through the Gospels, what you're reading is this, and in the Old Testament, in the books of the prophets especially, you're reading about a care for the community, a care for the impoverished, a care for those people who don't have social safety nets. This is more prominent in the United States, but the firefighters have what's called the Orphan and Widows Funds, which is for, you know, those who have who have been left behind because their firefighting loved one was killed in an accident, so they're cared for. Well, that comes out of the Old Testament, right? To care for the widow and the orphan, because in that society they didn't have social safety nets, a patriarchal society, which, you know, fortunately we're not in anymore. But you hear those language come through, and so that's that message that comes out in Scripture is one to care for those individuals who can't care for themselves, who are falling through the nets that society isn't looking after. The structures that we exist, you know, are, you know, I mean, we know they're not perfect, right? They try to do their best, and we're recognizing, well, we need to do more than what's there. And so that's the message of the gospel. Very in some ways countercultural, very much arguing against some of the status quo of saying sometimes we don't do well enough. And that's a critical message that we find in the Gospels, and worth reflecting on at this time of year as well.
How do you celebrate Christmas?
Oh, man. Leading up to Christmas is always sort of a really busy time. Try to get together with friends as I can. But I mean, Christmas Eve for me and for many who work within the church, either as choir directors or musicians and other ministers, is obviously a really, really busy time. So I just try to at some point in there just get some time spent with family to see my parents, my sister, my nephews, spend some time with my boys and the people that I love. And I mean, I will be really honest, you know, I mean, Christmas Day is a Sunday, so I have a service on Sunday morning, and that afternoon I am going to celebrate Christmas with a nap, Robert.
Reverend Neil Ellis, thank you so much for talking to me today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
That was Reverend Neil Ellis, minister at St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.